Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back to World Famous Phil Hendry Show, here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, a groundbreaking and revolutionary radio offering that will continue long past these days of gratuitude, or however that word is said. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, as we move into the future, the 21st century, the new millennium, if you will, we will transcend and encompass, we will reach out and embrace the new global communications reality. Bud, you're on.
Yay!
Cut. Very good. All right.
That was pretty good, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. Bud Dickman is with me, Robert Leonard as well. Both men paid pretty good to say that was really good, Mr. Hendry. Now, as I look at the coverage here of the Democratic National Convention, I got no problem with the people that are speaking. I got no problem with the president per se, because as an American, I want the president. As I mentioned the other hour, I don't want presidents to fail. As marvelously tricky and cute as the concept, I want him to fail because if he succeeds, he'll kill our country. That whole thing they did with Obama is ass. It's strictly for asshats thinking that way. And I'm not even going down that road. No, I'm totally for our presidents succeeding. And that means if you succeed in America, you succeed as an American. If you succeed as an American, you succeed in an American way. And that's what I want. So how can you not want the success of a man, a president? Nonetheless, I don't know. The guys that I had the problem with are looking at this ugly mug of Reverend Sharpton and this other midget. And, oh, man.
You talk about Ed Schultz? He ain't no midget.
No, there's some other guy there. All right, I don't want to get into it. But every time I look up...
What about like Rachel Maddow, man? Everybody making fun of how she's all dressed up like a geek who makes really good bongs. Has you ever had that friend that know how to make bongs?
Yeah, we had a friend of mine who's a four-eyed freak, big good bongs and everything.
Yeah, she looked like some four-eyed freak. I know how to make good bongs.
All right, okay, easy, will you, man? You're talking about the woman of my dreams. You're talking about the woman that I will marry someday.
Really?
I'm kidding. However, I think I'm going to start saying that. Anybody that puts down Rachel Maddow, I'll just say, you're talking about the woman I love. Just knock it off, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Yeah, what?
God, she looks weird.
But I'll give you that Rachel Maddow looks like a guy or dresses like she's a gay woman. She's a lesbian. And there seems to be among some lesbians that affectation, just as there's an affectation among all kinds of people of all gender and all gender orientation, sexual orientation, to look all different kinds of ways. There's all kinds of straight chicks that look pretty butch to me.
Yeah, like who?
To be perfectly honest with you?
Yeah.
Like my ex-wife, when she got into a pair of gym shorts and sneakers and was holding a basketball, she looked pretty butch, to be honest with you.
Yeah, she played basketball, though.
I don't care. So what? If any of you guys out there, any of you guys have a wife that played basketball in college or high school or is still a basketball player, then you know what I mean. They butch it up pretty good. I'm not saying they can't be feminine. And I don't mean butch in a derogatory way. I'm saying that there is a time, even for straight women, when they get, they sort of strip it down, man, and...
Yeah, what do you mean strip it down?
I'm talking about no makeup. Will you guys just...
Oh.
They're not wearing any makeup, and they're sweating like a racehorse, and they're out there, and they're out there playing hoops, man. You know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I had a cousin like that. She is married, had three kids, but every time she went out... Played football, you couldn't help but notice,
Played football?
What are you talking about, man?
What are you talking about?
Didn't you say that you're talking about women butching up?
Yeah.
My cousin, her husband was a cop, and she had like three kids.
And every time she went out and played football?
Yeah, she's on a ladies' football team.
God, well, I mean, I know I was talking about women that butch it up. I didn't...
Well, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. No, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with a lesbian chick. I mean, we were talking about straight chicks that butch it up, which I guess means that it's, what position she play?
Defensive tackle.
What?
Defensive tackle?
Yeah. But what are you guys talking about?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. Yeah, Margaret, do you, Margaret Gray checking back in.
So what is the problem? I'm listening to Bud talking about his cousin, and you sound a little bigoted. And I'm just...
I'm not, I don't mean to be bigoted.
No, I just wondered, he said it, his cousin played a defensive tackle.
Yeah, and?
Well, I mean, I was talking about women that play, if the guys that have wives that played basketball, straight women who butch it up a little bit, you know, because we were looking at Rachel Maddow.
I heard all of what you said. I want to know what makes it so strange that Bud's cousin, suddenly she says she's butch and you guys find that weird.
I mean, it's acting like this, Miss Gray.
Uh-huh.
Well, she played defensive tackle.
How big was she?
Who, my cousin?
No, your cousin's, how, yeah, the one that played football.
About 5'2", 100, probably about 110.
5'2", 110, and she played defensive tackle.
Well, what's wrong with that, Phil?
Will you just hold on for a minute, will you? I can't explain.
Now, are you putting me on?
No, you asked me about my cousin, right?
The one that played football.
Yeah.
How tall was she?
About 5'2", 5'3".
110.
Yeah.
And she played defensive tackle on a ladies' football team.
Yeah.
She must have been third string or something.
Yeah, probably on bench warmers.
No, she started.
And let me guess, she was an all-star.
Well, no, she wasn't an all-star or anything like that, but they won the championship. She had 4 sacks. I understand what's so weird about it. You guys are acting all weird and everything, like something freaked out with my cousin. All I said about stuff so you won't be bigot.
Huh? I didn't,
What did you say, man?
In other words, I'm not trying to be a bigot, Bud. All right, please don't use that word. I don't believe I'm being bigoted. I'm just simply saying, I started out, I think, by complimenting any woman who wants to be anything that she wants to be, and then,
No, you think it's weird that my cousin played defensive tackle on a football team and got 4 sacks the championship game. He's 5'2" and 110, eyes are blue. You know what that girl do to you? Has anybody seen my gal? And
get out of here, will you?
How are you doing that, man?
Has anybody seen my gal? So anyway, that's what I get for talking about. That's what I get for looking at the Rachel Maddow commercials. All right.
No, fair, Rachel Maddow, she's pretty good looking too, man.
Rachel Maddow's a very lovely woman. But there's, you know, it's ain't doing you and I any good. All right, so that's very antiquated thinking, and I forgive me, Ms. Maddow. You're one of the great minds on television. I don't agree with a lot of the stuff you say. I've even taken great exception to some of the things that you've said. But I would like you at least one time this week on the DNC set there for MSNBC, come in wearing that construction shirt, and I just, you know, one time.
Yeah, with like a pair of jeans.
Yeah, construction boots and jeans, stuff like that. All right, Phil Henry Show here. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, and our podcast, episode 39, dropped this week. You can download our podcast by going to our podcast banner on our homepage, philhenryshow.com. You can also go to iTunes, download it at iTunes if you'd like to. You can also go to philhenryradio.com, where you'll hear 24/7 free streaming of a couple of hours from the Phil Henry Show archives as well. All right, we're going to come back and we'll take a look at Michelle Obama's speech. Did she say anything cool? Is there anything groundbreaking? You know, what's up? What's down? What else is happening on this planet Earth? World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
I don't understand.
Welcome back. World famous Phil Henry Show here and philhenryshow.com. And, oh, I forgot, Bud. Why didn't you,
Oh, yeah. Go again. Hold on.
Slow down.
Okay.
Take a breath. What are you going to do?
I'm going to get the Michelle Obama.
Get the Michelle Obama news, yeah. Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. Democrats push to rebut GOP. Is the big headline here. First Lady Michelle Obama opened the Democratic National Convention on Tuesday with a deeply personal speech connecting the economic struggles of average workers, including those of her parents, in the policies her husband, Barack Obama, has pursued as president. Her nationally televised address was a portrait of the U.S. economy from the view of working people enduring personal struggles, including Mrs. Obama's father, a city water plant worker with multiple sclerosis. Mrs. Obama used the story of her father, Mr. Obama's bank worker grandmother, to explain the president's support for equal pay laws, his signature health insurance law, and student loan laws. Mrs. Obama didn't mention Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney or his party, but her story drew an implicit comparison to his life of greater privilege. It also framed the election around Mr. Obama's personal philosophy at a moment when his Republican opponents are arguing that the president has few concrete achievements to explain why voters are better off now than when he began his term. His Republican opponents are arguing that the president has few concrete achievements. Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if the Republican arguing about that. They're going to put on that man, what's his name, on Mitt Romney. You know, what about it? Well, I mean, what did Mitt Romney do?
What do you mean, what he do? He hadn't been a president.
Yeah, well, you say he hadn't been a president, I know, but okay, so?
So how can you say he hadn't done anything?
You want us to keep going?
Yeah, go ahead. I want to hear what you guys have to say. Go on.
Well, I mean, now I feel like a dumbass.
Yeah, well, you sound like a dumbass.
Well, no, you sound like the dumbass. At least I'm not going to say nothing like I don't know anything about.
Yeah,
you know, I'll tell you right now.
Hey, you guys want to argue, that's fine. I wanted to hear this, but if you want to fist fight, go ahead, Robert. Rebut what he just said.
He said butt. Yeah, you want to, I'll bet you want to butt.
Hey, come on. Bud, why don't you grow up?
I'm just saying, you said the dumbest ass thing I ever said. You talk about Mitt Romney.
What about Mitt Romney? He's done more, well.
Yeah, see, that's what you said. He's done more than Obama. What'd he do?
He was a President Olympic and everything.
Yeah, so what, man? He's President Olympics. That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, well, Obama not done anything.
Obama's been a president, and he's been on the job, and he knows the job better than Mitt Romney does.
Well, I don't know if he knows the job better than Mitt Romney does, and everything like that.
And I'm saying, what's Mitt Romney's name? That his name is Mitt. What's that mean? You know?
That doesn't mean anything. So what? We have presidents got jacked up names before. The presidents are going to have jacked up. What's that mean? That's not arguing about nothing.
I'm just asking about you. How intelligent are you?
Is that it?
Well,
I mean, the debate that you guys just had there is not too far afield of the way probably most Americans, I'm not saying most Americans sound like you guys, but generally the debates that people have about presidents wind up in that place.
What place?
Well, it's just this, you know, well, my, you know, they, generally people argue, generally people argue by way of attack. You know, we talk about these attack ads on TV. We talk about the attack style of politicians when they're out on the political campaign, when they're on the stump, as they say. And by the way, before you two guys ask me, what do they mean by stump? Because, Bud, you asked me last week off the air, and then you thought it was real funny to ask the question. And
yeah, but you didn't tell me.
I'm going to tell you now. It's because back in the days, they used to stand up on an old tree stump, and they would argue. That's how back in the day, you would argue to your friends and your neighbors, or you would put forth a political point of view. You'd stand on a freaking tree stump, and you say, hey, here's what I think. Now, you know, a lot of people argue that way. And so you two guys were saying what the way I hear a lot of people argue. You were saying, well, my guy may suck, or you may, you know, whatever you say about my guy, but your guy, and it's never about the things that your guy can do. You know?
I know my guy's President Obama. Yeah, I can tell you what he's done.
Yeah, okay, what's he done?
He took over an economy, man. First of all, he didn't make this economy go in the tank. That happened when Bush was president.
No, it didn't. It happened... The Democrat.
Wait, man. Phil said I get to see. And Obama stopped the bleeding. You don't remember, man. The whole world was about to go belly up. There was they had to go and stop all them toxic assets and stuff like that. And he stopped the bleeding on that. And then the economy went bad and the unemployment went bad. But that was where it was going.
All right. So if I've got you right here, Robert, you're saying that what President Obama did was apply a tourniquet, an effective tourniquet, to something that could have bled the country to death.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying he saved the country from what could have been a bigger, more disaster.
You can't say that. You don't know for sure.
Yeah, I can. That's the way it looked to me. That's the way it was looking to me.
Yo, you don't know that that would have happened. That's not accomplishment. Put on a what do you call a turn?
A tourniquet. Do you know what that is?
No.
That's when you stop the bleeding, man. You squeeze off. You squeeze it off.
Yeah, I bet you squeeze it off.
All right, hey.
Hey!
He's joking around, okay?
Every time I try to say something, he come up with a joke.
Hey, bud, Robert just made a really good argument. Now, what's your counter to that? And don't tell me, that's what I'm saying, you're always attacking Obama. Tell me about your guy, Romney.
Well, I didn't say Romney's my guy. I just said he'd be better than Obama.
Well, who is your guy then, man? What do you want to see happen for the country?
Yeah, don't talk about how bad Obama is. Tell about how good what you want to do.
I'm not running for president.
Talk about what you want to see your candidate, whoever they may be, do.
I want to see him get the jobs back and, I don't know, just get the jobs back and stuff. Most people don't have no jobs. Another thing is that we got to, like China, they have all of our money, and that, I don't like that either. And Obama did that too. You can't say that.
Hey, Felt said don't talk about Obama.
Don't talk about Obama. Just talk about your guy.
Well, I'm just saying that the, you know.
Yeah, see, you don't even know, man.
Yes, I do. You guys are staring at me like I'm, duh.
All right, I mean, it's okay, but you see how hard it is. Now, Robert made a halfway decent run at it. You couldn't even do it, man. Most people can't do what I just asked you guys to do.
What?
Most people cannot say what they want to have happen for this country and who their candidate, why they think their candidate will be good and what he will do. Because if you do that, suddenly you become a proponent for something and you're sticking your neck out. However, if you do what most people do, which is attack the incumbent and talk about how crappy he is, or attack the other guy's guy, say you're for the incumbent, say you're a Democrat, attack Romney because he's this, that, you don't have to stick your neck out, and you don't have to be a proponent for anyone or anything, and you're not up for grabs. It's very easy. It's much more preferable for people to stand back in the crowd, not stick their neck out, not be noticeable, and just toss their little brickbats from back in the crowd. It's tougher to be a proponent for something because that means you are standing up front. And that's why most people, you know, people get upset with candidates who go on the attack. But that's exactly what everybody else does when they sit at work or when they're in a diner or when they stand on a street corner or when they're in their kitchen or wherever they are with their friends and neighbors arguing politics. That's exactly what we all do because it's easy. It's a proactive kind of thing. It's an attack mode that is much preferable in the minds of people to having to be on the defensive when you're standing up for something. Okay?
Well, I don't know what you just said, you know.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay, well, I think most of the people listening do. All right? What are you looking at me for?
I don't think anybody understands either.
I tell you what you do. Get that clown, you know, we'll get Doubter on the phone and we can ask him, all right?
Doubter's an idiot, man. He's not going to know nothing.
Well, go ahead, call him up or call up somebody and we'll find out whether the average voter knows what it is that I just, anyway, world famous Phil Henry Show. So that was Michelle Obama tonight. I'm really glad that I filled you in on her speech. Well, I told you a little bit about how that all was going to go down. I thought half these guys weren't going to show up for this thing. I thought the political campaigns were like dead, man, dead in the water, you know?
Yeah, well, they were not going to go, and then they decided they would.
I thought there was like 90% of these candidates who are running for re-election didn't want to go anywhere near this convention because they had election campaigns to see to. San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro gave a ringing endorsement of President Obama on Tuesday in a convention keynote address that also blasted Mitt Romney for embracing policies that would pummel the middle class. Castro, the youngest mayor of a major U.S. city, also made history as the first Hispanic to deliver a keynote address at the Democratic National Convention, a role that propelled the 37-year-old from political obscurity to national prominence. Now, I do remember another mayor of San Antonio. What was that guy's name? He was a keynote speaker, I thought, too, and he was a Democrat, too, and I can't remember his name.
Yeah, it wasn't a keynote, though.
All right. Anyway, we'll be back. Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. What was the name of that guy that was a mayor of San Antonio?
Santa Ana.
Santa Ana?
Yeah.
That's... We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Guys are talking to me about that.
Yeah, you can't even say, though.
Yes, I can. Yes, Bud was just saying to me, folks. What were you saying, Bud?
You said that you agree with President Obama on a, or not.
Not Obama, man. How many times you got to say it?
It's Obama. I'm sorry.
Yeah, why do you keep screwing that up?
Because I just do. That President Obama on a health care.
I told you. Let me explain something to you. I had a very good friend in Canada who had breast cancer and had a double mastectomy and had reconstructive surgery. This girl went through all three of those in Canada. Now, does that sound like a major health problem? Gee, I think so. Was she the daughter of privilege and wealth? No. Is she the daughter of a government worker or a government heavyweight up there? No. Is she wealthy? Do people know who she is? Does she have connections? No. She's a mother of a son who works her ass off to provide for that boy, and that's about. And she worked in the record business, and she had some savings, and that's about it. She owns a home. She's no different in many ways than many average Americans. She had breast cancer. She had to have a double mastectomy. And she had reconstructive surgery. And it was all done under the Canadian health care plan. Now, hold on for a minute, because all of these stories, all this bullcrap that you people have been eating up about the Canadian health care plan, some of you people ought to be ashamed of yourselves for being so freaking stupid. That's number one. And number two, you ought to be ashamed of yourselves for every time somebody like me comes along and says, let me tell you how it really works up there. And what happened? Oh, you just la 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 la. They put their hands over their ears. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it.
I thought you said you was conservative on stuff.
I'm conservative on a hell of a lot of stuff, man, but I'm not stupid. Do you understand? There's trillions of dollars a year, trillions of dollars a year spent on health care in America. On the money that people owe on health care in America. And when a guy comes up to me and says to me, forget this, tort reform, that's what we need. And I know for a fact that it's about $150 billion and that's it at the outside. That guy's trying to make an ass out of me. And there's some people out there that don't mind. They like someone making an ass out of them. They want to eat that stuff up. They want to eat that crap up. $150 billion on tort reform. These guys sit there and they look you in the face. And they know they're talking to an idiot, and I'm putting myself right in that group. They think they're talking to a jackass, they're talking to Phil Hendry. And like my father used to say, I might have been born at night, but it wasn't last night. And I know when some guy is yanking me, and this stuff about tort reform, this and that, and all that stuff that adds up to a drop in a bucket, man. Get a clue. Wake up. You may not like national health care, that's fine. Don't tell me that tort reform is going to cut into that the trillions we spend on health care. It ain't going to do it. And you can stick your head in the sand. You can turn the radio off. You can go over to Michael Savage. You can go listen to Glenn Beck. You can go listen to all those jive-ass mothers telling you all kinds of fairy tales. Go right ahead. Fine. It ain't going to, I tell you right now, it ain't going to change the reality of things. Well, one bit. Getting back to my friend in Canada. She had cancer. Cancer! You go to the front of the line, man. I don't care what some dumbass who goes to Canada a couple of times a year and knows a friend who knows a friend who knows a friend. I've had people lying to me. I had some guy call my show one night with the biggest, thickest southern accent you ever heard in your life, and this ass is trying to tell me he's Canadian. If there's one thing that I'm an expert at, it's listening to someone's voice and knowing not only where they come from, but I can put it down to the what part of the state. That's how good I am. So when you call me up and you try to, for instance, pass yourself off as an American and you let slip with an organization and I know you're from north of the border right off the bat, well, it works the same way the other way, too. So anyway, she went to the front of the line for her surgery. She went a life-threatening illness, folks, like cancer. You understand? You don't sit and wait. That's a lie. I don't give a crap how much they paid some fat, disgruntled, stupid nurse that used to work in some doctor's office in Canada, and she's this, that, I don't care. And you can have private health care in Canada if you want it. You can go to a doctor if you want to. You can go to a doctor in America if you want to. A private doctor in America, even with Obamacare, if you want to. You don't have to change your insurance provider if you don't want to. How do I know this stuff? I came at this argument and this discussion of national health care.
Yeah, are you sure about this?
Yes, bud. I came at this the same way a lot of Americans. I didn't know a damn thing about it. I knew I had my health insurance. I have it through my union. I got great health insurance. Thank God. Thank God for SAG. Thank God for AFTRA. My unions have great health insurance. I pay for hospitalization. I went in for for pneumonia. I was in the hospital the first time in my life. I had every kind of health. I had everything going, man. And I had I was in a great hospital, St. John's Regional, here in Ventura County, a fantastic hospital. I had great doctors. I had respiratory therapists. I had pneumonia. I had x-rays, everything. I think I wound up paying a couple of grand in terms of the deductible. But everything else was handled, and including the oxygen that came home with me. I had to come home with an oxygen machine, guys. Let me tell you something. If you go through pneumonia and you still smoke cigarettes, if you're 57 and you go through pneumonia and you still smoke cigarettes, somebody ought to just take you out and put you out of your misery. I ain't kidding you, man. You got to be, you know what, you're taking up space on the planet. We need smarter people than that. Get lost. And if there's one thing I've done in my life that's smart, and it might be the only thing I've ever done in my life that was smart, it's when I quit smoking cigarettes the day I was laying on my back in a hospital bed with pneumonia. But making a long story short, my insurance is $350 a quarter. Wait a minute. Is that right? Yes. A quarter. Now, yes, it's a wealthy union. But you know what? A lot of unions are wealthy. As a matter of fact, the pension and welfare in a lot of unions is pretty freaking good, man. I don't know what's going on with the checkers, the Teamsters. Every time those guys strike one of these grocery stores here in the United States, and it's because someone wants to mess with their, health insurance, or they want them to pay, you know, they want to take it out of their check in order to contribute to the union's health coverage. If I was the union, I'd just pick it up, man. What's the story there? Anyway, I don't want to get into that. But here's the point. When my friend had double mastectomy surgery, it was breast cancer. So bang, she has the surgery. Now what's the next step? It's the reconstructive surgery. Reconstructive surgery. Well, the next step is the chemo and like that. So she's going through that. Then comes reconstructive. Now, is it life-threatening if you don't get your reconstructive surgery? No. Are you going to die if you don't immediately get your reconstructive surgery? No. So are you at the very front of the line? No. But guess how long she had to wait for her reconstructive surgery? Well, she had to get through the chemo and she had to get through her radiation or whatever the hell it was, because you're not going to go through major surgery like that while you're on chemo. You're not going to do it while the body is weakened, trying to heal itself, trying to right itself, its immune system and so forth. But once that was done, she waited a grand total of 6 whole months. Wow. 6 months. Now, I know what happens with a story like that. It comes down to the States, and it sounds like this. My friend had breast cancer. She had to wait 6 months for one of her surgeries. That's how it comes down. Or, you know what? Why don't we just double it, man? Make it sound real good to those dumbass Yanks down there. A year. Boy, those Canadians, man, they must, or whoever's telling the story, they must say, you know, go down and tell the Yanks these stories, because those dumbasses down there, they'll believe anything about bad health care. So just tell them all this, and they'll believe you. You think I'm kidding? Canadians, sometimes they look at Americans, they go, what the hell is going on down there? There's freaking people down there. They got a great country. They got everything you possibly wanted. They're the stupidest bastards sometimes that you've ever seen in your life. And they're buying this stuff about our health care, this and that. You got people up in Canada been living on national health care and having all kinds of terrible diseases and illnesses and physical problems taken care of successfully for years. Ladies and gentlemen, healthcare, national healthcare, was first introduced, as we know it today, first introduced, do you want to know when? In Germany, in the late 19th century, by a man named Bismarck. You know that name, don't you?
Yeah, I know that song, Sink the Bismarck.
Yeah.
You know the song, Sink the Bismarck, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they named that ship after Bismarck.
That's the guy, right?
Yes, that was the guy. That's how bad an idea national health care is. It's over 100 years old.
Yeah, but you know what else, man? That people say about Nazis.
That's right. What about a Nazis came along?
Oh, well, that's what caused the Nazis to come along. Yes, national health care. That's, you got it, man. What, are you crazy or something, bud? That had nothing to do with it, okay? And, in fact, in Germany, when they introduced national health care, it didn't cause a ripple of a protest, not so much as a small fart of a protest. In late 19th century Germany, probably the most uptight, tight-ass society the world has ever known. That's what a big failure of an idea national health care is. It's been going on for years in some of the most developed countries in the world. Now, I understand that we're Americans, and I appreciate that. I understand we ain't Europeans, and I appreciate that. I know where that thinking comes from. I've studied our history, and I'm an American. And I know how we are. From the very beginning, we wanted nothing to do with Europe. To us, it represented a corrupt system of monarchies and dictatorships, and we wanted to leave that behind. We were the new world, and so we're going to leave everything European behind us. And every time we say European style this, European style that, it's coming from that mindset. I get it. But it doesn't mean that every single solitary thing they ever thought of in Europe, you know, folks, Our progeny, or not our progeny, our forebears are not only from Africa and not only from Asia, they're from Europe. And we did bring some of the better ideas with us. So she had her surgery as soon as they could order it up. As soon as she was healthy enough, she began her reconstructive surgery. And oh, by the way, folks, throughout this entire process, whatever physical therapy she needed, she had. And then the reconstructive surgery, and then her prescription medicines. Nothing was delayed. Nothing was put on hold. Nobody sat in a waiting room and bled to death. No one sat there as the cancer ate away at their body, waiting and praying and pleading for a doctor to see them because national health care in Canada is so corrupt. This is an absolute lie that has been proffered by the anti-health care people. And this has come, folks, I'm telling you, because I was absolutely neutral on healthcare. I don't know how I felt about it. It sounded pretty bad, to be honest with you, to me. It sounded like a stupid idea. It sounded like, why don't we just pay our bills around here? What the hell's our problem? And sure, yeah, if people can't afford it, we can find a way to help them. But, and I recognize now that it is cheaper for our country in the long run. Can help us. But it is a long run. I listen to all these people talking about what we're going to do for our offspring. What are we going to do for our grandchildren? What are we going to do for our great-grandchildren? Oh, I don't want to pass the dental. If you are opposed to some kind of a national health care remedy, you're passing it along to your grandkids. So don't give me this bull crap about how you don't want to pass anything along. You got to pass the problem along to them. You solve it.
Shut up, man. I said a good speech, too.
Yeah, but his speech was better.
I'm not trying to get a speech here. All right, let's take a break. The Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back. However, I'm voting for Romney. Now,
you are?
I don't know who I'm voting for yet. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Other than that, I like Romney. I'm just joking. Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So we have a fire burning here in the Los Angeles area. In fact, this is near where I grew up. I grew up in Arcadia, which is a little town in the San Gabriel Valley. And that's about 10 to 13 miles to the northeast of Los Angeles. 3,800-acre fire burning in the San Gabriel Mountains is one key ingredient short of potential calamity, the Santa Ana winds. Without winds like the notorious Santa Anas, the fire burning in the Angeles National Forest made no move Tuesday toward Los Angeles suburbs at the southern foot of the mountain range and was remaining in the wilderness.
What do you mean about how this nature cleaning itself up?
It is. It's nature cleaning itself up. Fires break out. Excuse me, folks, for just a minute. I'm getting over here to our video computer so that our friends on Phil TV in HD can look at... What I want to do is bring up a weather map.
Why are you going to do that?
Because the weather maps sometimes will have... You know, Bud, have you been in here messing around with this computer? Because I'm going to start kicking some ass if you have.
No.
The weather map sometimes will have a radar shot of smoke or some kind of a, you know, some atmospheric, you know, problem like that. Extra smoke, extra fog or clouds or something. They say that, not they say, we actually saw evidence of the fires that burned the World Trade Center could be seen from satellite photography that was taken over New York City. Jet Propulsion Laboratory climatologist William Patzert said the winds were the only thing absent from the current fire situation because all the other major fires, including drought and dense population, all the other major factors, including drought and dense population, already exist. Southern California's population in 1950 was 4 million people. Today it's pushing 20 million, and many people are living in areas that were historically considered fire corridors. I used to live in one, man, right over there on Decker Canyon Road on the way to Malibu. And getting fire insurance was impossible for my house. So it had to be got through the state of California. So California required that there be fire insurance on some homes in some areas. I think probably California requires fire insurance on no matter where you live. But particularly in these areas because a lot of insurance companies wouldn't handle it, and I couldn't find one insurance company. I think we finally found one. It might have been even Farmers, but it was really hard to get a price. And at one point, somebody said, well, if nothing else, the state of California will insure you.
Why? Could your house burn down?
Because where we were living, yeah, was a traditional fire corridor. There are homes now being built all over America in places where they weren't ever built before. A lot of it has to do with the fact that our engineering, construction has improved. We can build houses now on soil that we might not have felt confident building them on in the past. We can engineer a home now. Some of these houses that were put on the sides of mountains, that were built on the sides of mountains in California back in the day, and would slide down the side of a mountain at the first rainfall of the winter, now these houses are staying put, you know?
Yeah, the houses fall, go down the side of a mountain, they must have been built a long time ago. Yeah, back when we didn't know how.
Yeah, well, a lot of them were. A lot of them were built back when we didn't know how. So we built houses that were on the sides of these mountains, and right down the mountain we go. But now we know how to build these houses. Now, when it comes to fire areas, I mean, we're building houses in fire areas. the human race, if we know anything about the human race, nothing holds us back. Nothing. There's nothing that nature has ever done that holds us back. Human beings, if there's one thing about human beings, and I actually admire this about us. People say, oh, there's some things that you can't do. Let me tell you what. If we want to live somewhere, sooner or later, we're going to figure out how to do it. And all this other horse dung, it ain't going to matter. If we want to live on the side of a mountain, if we want to live upside down, we're going to live upside down. If it becomes a necessity, the human species, the human animal, finds a way to do it. We can live in the ice and snow of the North Pole. We can live in the hottest regions of Death Valley if we need to. We can live underground. We can live overground.
What? You say we can live upside down?
If we had to live upside down, yes.
When are we going to do that?
I don't know. What do you mean, when are we going to do that?
What are we going to live upside down for?
What, are you starting to cry?
No, man, he's crying.
We don't have to live upside down. I'm saying, what if we had to?
Yeah, but I don't want to.
Bud, we don't have to live upside down, okay?
No, man, you're crying.
Bud, what's he talking about?
Bud, I'm saying if. Man, if you can keep your head while all others around you are losing theirs, you, my son, are a man. World-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft. Meet Phil Hendry. See you guys tomorrow. Tonight. I'm going really fast, but then I take Bozo's pep pill. We'll see you tonight at 10 o'clock. Till then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.